From listener-supported KTOO, this is Juno Afternoon for Wednesday, August 30th, 2023. I'm your host, Boston Christopher Gunathjish Hawa, for joining the conversation. On today's show, the new Alaska Heritage Emergency Network, an initiative focused on strengthening each cultural heritage sector's disaster response and recovery. A sneak peek at a new project from the KTOO news team led by community engagement producer Tasha Elizarde, and a preview of the Juno Jazz and Classics Fall Music Festival. Those conversations and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hanson Gress. Ka eat with the shoe ye, we kashuk are ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin talk an a kaya ha an a kuk gunnish cheese.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. The Klene Di have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot, once part of the Tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who travel to and from these Tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. We'd like to take a moment and say thank you to the individuals who helped us craft our daily land acknowledgement. Gunathjish Devira Starbart, who planted the idea of making it super place specific and guided us on pronunciation. Lillian Petershore, who created so much of the beautiful structure. Ishmael Hope, who gave us additional ideas, and Ernestine Hayes, Bob Sam, and Fran Houston, who gave important feedback. We are grateful to all those offering guidance as we grow as an organization. Listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. In 2022, the Alaska Heritage Emergency Network was created. It's an initiative to have meetings and conduct events focused on strengthening each cultural heritage sector's knowledge and communicating how each contributes to disaster response and recovery. That sounds like a lot. We're going to break it all down right now. Joining me now in Studio 2K, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson, is Jonas Lamb from the University Egan Library and Mary Irvin, curator of statewide services for the Alaska State Museum. Gunathjish, for you both being here today. How are you?
Pretty good. Thanks for having us, Boston.
Awesome. Yeah, it's great to have you all here. And we're going to figure out what this thing is. I know there's been some press releases going out, and maybe not a lot of people have heard about this yet. So it's kind of interesting. Let's find out about like how this got created. And I mean, where did this come from?
Well, I'll jump in.
Yeah.
About 2.5 years ago, the State Museum, which is an agency within the State Library, Archives, and Museums, had written a federal grant, and we got National Endowment for the Humanities money, $250,000, to help museums, libraries, and archives around the state work on their emergency plans, right? So we had about 50 participants in three cohorts over the course of 2.5 years, updating their emergency plans, getting ready for what happens if a disaster occurs. So this was focused on folks with a collection of cultural heritage materials, and people did a really good job. But at the end of that, last September 2022, we wanted to know what we should do now.
Yeah.
So we had a retreat up in Fairbanks, and we had people from all over, Alaska Library Association, state agencies, Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, the Park Service, Anchorage Museum, all these different folks. And we thought, how do we stay connected and how do we help each other when disasters or emergencies occur? And we thought we need a way to be communicating with each other on a normal basis so that it's not a brand new thing to try to rise up and help each other in the case of an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So we've developed a listserv to bring people together. Doesn't cost anything, and we're hoping that lots of libraries, archives, and museums statewide with anybody who's an emergency responder or emergency management agency will subscribe to our listserv and just start communicating with each other. We're hoping to offer trainings and be aware of weather events, which are getting more and more tremendous. So that's basically an overview. It's been kind of a fun thing to put together, and we've landed on the phrase Alaska Heritage Emergency Network, and informally we've been thinking about it as AHENS.
It came out of the retreat. One of the participants drew this wonderful nest, and of course the egg are all these cultural heritage collections. And so in theory, you know, we're the hen that's hoping to help empower folks to protect their cultural heritage collections, wherever they may be.
I love the things that come out of, you know, cohorts and things like that. It's really funny, the thinking that happens. It's awesome. So Jonas, how is the University Egan Library? Are you a participant? Or are you sort of one of the founder kind of companies in this? How did y'all get involved?
Great question. So one of the wonderful things about working in academia is you get to do community service and professional service as part of your work. So I have been in the leadership role with the Alaska Library Association for the last several years. Currently, I'm the immediate past president. So actually, my participation in AHEN is as a representative of the Alaska Library Association. So there's been a lot of work lately to recognize that we have a lot of shared mission and shared interest between libraries, archives, and museums. So Museums Alaska is a professional association representing museum professionals across the state, and the Alaska Library Association represents library professionals around the state. So we were seen as kind of an integral partner in helping ensure that, you know, in the event of an emergency, we have ready access to the library profession, and we can serve as sort of that intermediary until we get folks subscribed to the listserv for AHEN.
Yeah, getting people signed up. So it sounds like this sort of got developed, and the idea came from a grant that came out of the pandemic. I'm curious, are there other models like this around the country? Are there things like this that you all have, you know, are we reinventing the wheel, or are we looking at other models, I guess is the question.
Yeah, it's a great question, you know, and there are other emergency networks around the country, but surprisingly few. Connecticut has one. There used to be an office within FEMA that dealt with heritage collections. You know, most of the coursework for that 2.5-year course that I was describing is online, and we've been approached by lots of people for the password. How do we get into that content, you know? And so we're actually going to drop the password so that it's free content for folks who want to work on their emergency plans. But FEMA actually sent a representative to our retreat back in September, and she said, this thing, if it gets off the ground and if it can sustain itself, is one of the best things in the country.
Mm.
So we're hopefully on the cutting edge. If we can get things going and sustain them, it's really exciting. You know, this is not a new idea. Probably, Museums Alaska is an old organization in the state. They've been around for 40 years. And this idea of connecting institutions with each other for the purpose of responding to emergencies isn't new. You know, it surfaces every, 7 years or so.
Every emergency?
Yeah, every emergency, every flood, every disaster. But the reason we think that this is going to work and sustain itself is that we have partners in other state agencies who are coming at it from the emergency management response agency angle. So I didn't actually even know that there was, sorry to my friends out there in this agency, but I didn't even know that there was a state agency division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management within the state. Well, it's a big division, 60 people, and their focus is to respond to emergencies from a state level. And they're welcoming the chance to have cultural heritage organizations promote their plans and integrate those plans into the state response. And if you can do that, your institution actually has a great chance of getting a little bit more attention a lot earlier on post-emergency. So that's a great thing, you know. And because they're statutorily mandated to, work with everybody who's impacted by an emergency, they're welcoming the chance to help this group get off the ground and sustain itself as well.
Cool. So I'm curious, what is the definition of a cultural heritage institution?
That's a very good question. And I don't know that we've gone as far as try to define it, primarily with the hope that we don't limit anyone from participating who thinks that they have cultural heritage collections. We had some discussion, should they be public agencies? Should they be private? Should they be tribal? All of the above.
All of the above, absolutely. And, there's some states who their network includes theaters because theaters have collections of, materials as well. We have focused a bit on organizations that have a collection, but it can be anything. You know, it doesn't have to be ethnographic or Alaska Native material. It can be library resources. It can be two-dimensional. It can be three-dimensional. We're hoping for participation by public entities, but we will definitely work with corporate entities. You know, a lot of Alaska Native corporations have extraordinary art in their corporate headquarters. Mirbok, actually, the typhoon that was bearing down on the west coast of Alaska last fall happened the day after our retreat. And as our retreat was taking place to, you know, formulate this Alaska Heritage Emergency Network, some of the people were racing out of the retreat room to check their phones and see if there were entities that were going to, cultural heritage entities with collections that were going to be impacted by this storm. And so it's exactly what Jonas said. It's a broad definition. At this point, we're not limiting it. We're hoping for as many participants as possible. It's a free thing to participate in, and we welcome all comers because that's how you get great ideas flowing.
Yeah, I noticed in the press release that was put out that basically it does say, it's free participation to arts and cultural organizations and emergency management responders, right, at all levels across Alaska. So I guess it's really like if you're out there and you're wondering if you fit into that definition, it's pretty broad. So and the listserv, like it you said, is free to sign up for. So why not sign up, right? And then see where it goes from there. And if it's something that's useful to your organization or to your group, then great. And if not, then you can just delete the listserv, right? That's how that would work, I guess. Exactly. But the sharing of knowledge and the sharing of how things are impacted. And so I guess I'm curious, like, what's the importance of having this emergency network? Like, what is the importance of that? And what are we hoping to protect?
Right. Well, you know, the cultural heritage of Alaska belongs to all of us, right? And people always come first, objects come second. But oftentimes when a collection has been collected or amassed, it begins to help define us, and we find ourselves and we're stronger for our collective presence within that collection. So, as people recover from emergencies, they look to, you know, self-identity and renewing their who they are after an emergency. And we think that cultural heritage institutions and nonprofit organizations with collections can really help bring people together and help support people in the wake of disasters and emergencies.
How much of the has there been discussion around like digital assets, like, because that is also something that could be impacted, right? I was thinking the other day of how much we rely on that old internet. And like, if that internet goes down,
oh yeah,
we lose a lot of things. I mean, just as an individual, you can think about it like all of your photos are on your phone. What happens if the server goes down or the server gets destroyed? You know, they may have a duplicate, hopefully. Some do, some don't. But what happens to all that? Because there's so much of our history is now documented online and in digital form. So has there been talk about that as well?
Absolutely. This is a hot topic. Come work in museums, Boston, because this is a hot topic in museums right now and libraries, I would imagine. Digital-born artwork, for example. You know, they bumped up against this in the 2.5 year learning opportunity that the museum ran, but somebody said it best when they said the best safety deposit box to keep your inventory in or some of your collections in isn't a vault. It's not, you know, a double-walled vault somewhere. It's the cloud, right? And so we think about backing up our inventory lists, and digital assets almost have it easier that they can be backed up in a cloud.
They can be multiple places as opposed to a piece of, let's say, just a piece of artwork. Like I've been to the basement of the museum, and there's stuff that never gets put upstairs that's just down there in the collection, in the museum's ownership, that may or may not ever see a collection upstairs. But that stuff is still of value, right? But
Absolutely.
It's also just that one thing.
Absolutely.
That if something happens, it's gone. But with the idea of, you know, digital assets, hopefully there is, you know, multiple copies of that thing out there, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's, I think, part of the not defining the organizations is so that an organization that maybe their primary collection is a digital collection that's, you know, that's how people encounter it and enjoy it. But there are likely analog copies, you know, like maybe it's not all in the cloud, but there are servers in Hoonah, for example, where those oral recordings are stored. And so that would also be an organization that we would be interested in, you know, having contact with so that we could respond in the event of an emergency. But I love the lots of copies keep stuff safe. LOCKS, that's sort of the like acronym for digital preservation. Just, you know, take a hard drive home with you at night and have a copy in the cloud and
right.
hope you're
I need to do that for my personal
burn.
Life too. I always think I forget about that. I can back up my own hard drive too, actually. So what are some of the goals of the network? Have those been sort of outlined a little bit? I know I saw a couple on the website, but what are some of the things that y'all are hoping to do as more institutions come on board? Are there going to be monthly or yearly meetings, or what's some of the goals that y'all have?
You know, first things first is we just want people to get on that listserv so we can communicate with each other. The folks from the Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management want to offer regular training opportunities with us. We have a couple of conservators, object conservators and paper conservators, who are part of the Alaska Heritage Emergency Network Committee, and they'll be offering, you know, presentations on what to do with waterlogged material, that kind of thing. So we're hoping to do a lot of trainings. We're hoping to, maybe develop mutual aid agreements between organizations, but that's not, you know, not mandatory. We're looking at possible integration of GIS databases. You know, we're I'm playing around with some software right now that plots all the museums in Alaska on a map, And you would think that that would exist somewhere already, right? But if you've got a storm coming off the west coast of Alaska, it would be so simple to key up that database and just hit the museum layer and see, oh, who's in the direct line? Well, it's these three organizations. And then, you know, get in touch with them and see, you know, what kind of supplies do you have? What do you need? And how can we all assist? And then just knowing that people are standing by, ready to help in the case of an emergency. I mean, it's worth its weight in gold, really, you know? So we're pretty excited about this.
Yeah, it sounds really amazing. And is there like a leader of this? I mean, who's sort of in charge? Is there a collection of, I guess it's some of the state organizations that you mentioned at the start, maybe?
You know, two state agencies are the lead partners. So it's the Alaska State Museum, which is within the Department of Education, Division of Libraries, Archives, and Museums. So the State Museum is partnering to be the one of the two lead partners with the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. But we've got a steering committee of, I think, a dozen people. And they include the Anchorage Museum, the Alaska Native Heritage Center, the Fairbanks North Star Borough Libraries, UA remote campuses, including such far-flung places as Kotzebue Museum of the North up at Fairbanks, the Arts Council. So we've got a nice steering committee, and this committee's intending to meet monthly and do sort of a presentation monthly. But also then, you know, follow that with 10 minutes of business kind of thing.
Right. Sounds good. All right. So how do we participate? I know I'll put the listserv address because that's really hard to give out over the radio. I'll link that on our webpage for today's episode. And I know you can also just Google Alaska Heritage Emergency Network and you'll end up at Museum Alaska and they have like a page about it. And there is a link there. To do that. Is that the best way to get involved, is sign up on the listserv?
I think so. Yeah. But, you know, we're not requiring that level of commitment. If you're just interested in dipping your toe in and listening to this presentation that we're doing on Wednesday, September 6th at noon, shoot me an email and I'll shoot you the Zoom link for it. And my email, can I give that?
Yeah, of course. Oh, I was going to give it out because you put it in the press release, so I figured it's public.
It is very public. So it's Mary, M-A-R-Y dot Irvine, I-R-V-I-N-E, at alaska.gov. Mary dot Irvine, I-R-V-I-N-E, at alaska.gov. And if you shoot me an email saying you're interested in this this wild new Alaska Heritage Emergency Network, I will send you the Zoom link for the September 6th at noon informational webinar. And hopefully people will find it as interesting as we've found putting it together.
Absolutely. Well, Jonas Lamb from the University Egan Library and Mary Irvine, Curator of Statewide Services for the Alaska State Museum, telling us all about this new Alaska Heritage Emergency Network, or a hen.
That's right, a hen.
Gwyneth, cheers for you all being here today. Is there anything else that you needed to mention today before we head out? You got this webinar in next week and we got the listserv. We'll make that happen. Sounds good, right?
That's great. Boston, thank you so much for having us. And, you know, the State Museum is doing a really great, fun lecture this Friday night. Ellen Carley, who's our co-curator of the Big Gut Parka show on display this summer.
She's on the show tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
No. I'm just saying she's on the show. It's going to be a great chat.
It's going to be a great, great conversation. But her lecture starts at 6:30 this Friday, and I can't wait. I love listening to Ellen. And,
awesome.
It'll be a great lecture.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Gwyneth Cheesh for you both being here. Thanks so much.
Gwyneth Cheesh. Thank you.
Up next, KTOO's community engagement producer Tasha Elizardi is here with a sneak peek of an exciting project coming from the KTOO news team. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from KTOO.
Step in to the savory moment. Here's a cooking tip. When you're wrestling with a big life decision, put your complicated thought processes on hold and just make a quiche, a crab quiche. It's a cook's version of sleeping on it, only you get a luscious meal instead of a stiff neck. Use fresh crab if you have it, or acquire some frozen lump crab meat and let it thaw while you pour yourself a beverage. As for a pastry shell, you've got a lot going on, so do yourself a favor and just use a store-bought crust. They were made for moments like these, and let's be honest, they're pretty good. You're welcome. Next, sauté some onion with butter, garlic, Old Bay, a pinch of nutmeg, and fresh pepper. Wilt in 2 big handfuls of spinach, then add crumbled feta. Spoon this fragrant mixture into the pastry shell along with the crab meat and cover with a custard made of eggs, heavy cream, and milk. Slide the pan into a 375-degree oven and bake until set. While it's baking, take a walk and count the clouds and finish. Serve your quiche with salad greens in a garlicky vinaigrette and you've got dinner. And maybe a decision. Research shows it's easier to decide something after a period of distraction. According to David Creswell of Carnegie Mellon University, the unconscious brain mulls over options when your conscious mind is focused elsewhere. In this case, on making a quiche. Does it have to be a quiche, and more specifically, a crab quiche? Well, no, but it really should be. No one knows why, but they just work best. Find the full recipe for the best crab quiche at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. For the last several months, KTOO community engagement producer Tasha Elizarde has been doing a segment here on Juno Afternoon called Chef's Hollow Talk, where she interviews local chefs and other food artisans about their delicious dishes and cultural heritage. Now, she is leading a very cool project that is coming soon from the KTOO news team. And Tasha joins me now to tell us all about it. Gunath Cheesh, Tasha, how are you today?
Hey, I'm good. I'm not going to lie. It's a bit weird being on the other side of the table right now as someone who is being interviewed rather than interviewing.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to be here to talk about this project that I've been working on for the past it's been like a year now, so.
Yeah, it's been something that's been, you know, brewing and figuring it out and the details. And so this project, I know it has like a few different pieces and components. Will you run down the various parts and then we can talk about some of the specifics about each one. But first of all, what's the overall title of this project?
Yes, so the project is called Manga Cuento.
Manga Cuento.
Which means stories in Tagalog, which if you don't know, Tagalog is the national language of the Philippines other than English. And so this project has been definitely like a labor of love. It's a bunch of different cool moving parts. The easiest rundown to go through is that KTOO is producing a podcast series about different stories from the Filipino community here in Juneau. And then we are also working with the Juneau Douglas City Museum as well as Filipino Community Incorporated to put on an exhibit at the Juneau Douglas City Museum opening on October 6th. And then we'll also be having an event hosted at Philcom Hall here in downtown, which will be October 7th and 8th. So we got a lot of really cool things, but the point is that we're trying to celebrate, you know, Filipino history in Juneau because this community has been here since over 100 years. And what's extra exciting too is that this is the first year that Alaska will be celebrating Filipino American History Month in state statute because Representative Genevieve Mina had, who is actually the second Filipino-American legislator in the Alaska legislature since Thelma Buchholz, she, in her first session, had passed the Filipino-American History Month bill, putting that celebration formally in Alaska state statute. So this is our first one officially. And we have a ton of these cool things going on.
That's so awesome. It sounds so good. So let's talk about the podcast first. So I know that the entire news team is working on the podcast. So how many episodes of the podcast are there going to be? Do we know how many? Because I know they've been working on it for months, right?
Yeah. So let's see. We have 5 podcast episodes. And actually, the way that this started was back in December, way back in December. I had basically talked to a couple of different members of the community, put out surveys, you know, all of that. And collected these ideas from community members about, you know, what kind of stories do you want to hear? What kind of stories do you want to learn about our community? So it was really like an initiative to bring about, shed light on the topics that, you know, we as Filipinos here in Juneau are interested in. And then from that, we kind of bridged out these themes from the things that we saw in the surveys and then created these topic lines for each episode. So each reporter took one theme. So we have a range of things. For example, the episode that I'm producing is the one on kind of how Filipinos have came to Juneau. So broadly migration stories. We have a couple of other things like the history of the Filipino Community Hall, how that was established, and also another episode on the mestizo community, which if you don't know the term mestizo, refers to Filipinos who are also Alaska Native. They can also identify themselves as Indipino or as other terms, but for the folks that we had interviewed, they identified themselves as mestizo. And so we wanted to shed light on that story as well. So, yeah, short answer, 5 episodes, a lot of really interesting content. And the cool thing about this project, too, is that a lot of this information isn't recorded because, you know, Filipino history in Alaska isn't well recorded. There's only one book that describes our stories, and that was written by Thelma Buchholz, and that only goes up to the 1970s, and that book had recently gotten out of print. So there's really not a lot of record out there. There's nothing out there that's specifically Juneau, of course, despite us being one of the largest Filipino communities in Alaska and having the only established Filipino community hall in the state as well. So a lot of this information is things that, you know, we were doing heavy reporting on, deep reporting on, all oral history, and trying to piece together, like, what is the story of this community in Juneau?
That's that sounds so great. And it's going to be awesome to have, like, a audio documentary, you know, a documentary on that. So have that as a sort of, so is the style of the podcast, what is the style of the podcast? Is it going to be is it interview based? Is there narration in it? Or is there sort of a theme through it like that?
Yeah, there's some narration. So what we had done was, so we're still like in the production phase,
of course,
but it's been cool because, you know, all of these are oral histories. So people, we all went out and, you know, talked to members of the community, heard their stories and included that. There's some narration involved, but for the most part, we tried to make sure that the voices that we hear the most from are the people that we talk to. So that's kind of going to be exciting. We also have like a lot of, you know, fun audio bits too, of because there are a lot of, say, old archival videos that the Filipino Community Incorporated owns. We kind of weave that in there. I'm excited about our theme song, which is a clip from one of the old Ali Tap Tap dance songs. If you don't know Ali Tap Tap, it was the dance group that was affiliated with Philcom in the early 2000s. And they did a ton of big performances across the state. potentially even nationally, I think. So they're really awesome, and we wanted to honor them by including their music in there too.
That's so cool. And I know we're going to highlight some of the episodes here on Juno Afternoon. We'll probably have some interviews that go along with that. And when is the podcast set to launch? Is it when is that?
Yeah, it's October 6th. So everything for this project kind of launches that same first weekend of October.
Okay.
So, you know, starting off Filipino American History Month, or as I like to call it, FAM, with a big bang.
And they'll release weekly?
Yeah. I think the plan will be we want it to release weekly through the month, and we'll start with, you know, my episode around migration stories, and we'll continue on to the other reporters' stories. So yeah.
That sounds really awesome. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the museum component, because all of this is part of the whole project, right? So
yeah.
And the Juno Douglas Museum is really stepping up here and being a host for this. What is the museum portion?
Yeah, so that's going to be a full exhibit. So that exhibit will be up from October 6th. We're going to have a nice first Friday gathering. So that'll be exciting. And it'll be running there until about late November, November 22nd is, I believe, the last day that it'll be the showing. And it's funny because right before this, I was just meeting with the museum about, you know, building our layout, all of that stuff. Basically, we have a ton of items from Philcom Hall that we'll be displaying in the museum, as well as a lot of community submissions. So some of the people that we interviewed, some just, you know, community members out there, have really cool historical items that will be included in the exhibit. Like, for example, we have some like old citizenship papers from one of the submissions. We also, KTOO has been great about producing a montage of the old videos that we've gotten from Filipino Community Incorporated, from like old dance stuff, just old activities, all that. And, you know, we have a ton of things from July 4th because Philcom has had such a long history of participating in July 4th. We have, I think, record of being in that since like the 1920s. The awards part we have dating back to sometime in the 1970s till now. And so we just have, you know, so many cool items out there, and we're going to be piecing together this really long history, over 100 years of history of this community being here.
Wow. You have put a lot of work into this.
Yeah, I won't lie. It's been a lot of work, but it's been very great because, again, like this stuff is not really well recorded. And I think it's about time that we have it recorded out there. And it's really just the beginning. I'm looking forward to in the future seeing more of that presence coming about and really getting these things recorded, educating folks, sharing it within our community, whether that's the Filipino community or the broader Juno community. And what's been really exciting too is working with so many different community organizations, with individuals who are just so excited to be doing this, to be working on this, and are coming up with even more ideas about how to do it. Like the other day, we were cataloging a lot of items that Filipino Community Incorporated owns inside the hall. And some of the volunteers that were there were like, yeah, oh my gosh, there are so many of these beautiful costumes. What if we hosted a fashion show in the future? And that's the type of thing that I like hearing, is we have so many community members who want to continue to, you know, show how proud we are to be Filipino in this town. So
absolutely. And then the event that's happening, you mentioned at Philcom Hall, right? And that will be on that same weekend. So you're basically going to go to First Friday, enjoy all of that, stop by the Juno Douglas City Museum, see the exhibit, listen to the first podcast episode, and then on Saturday and Sunday, there's a big, and then it's a celebration, basically, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I've been calling it like a community celebration, because we'll just really be there to celebrate a lot of the contributions that our community has made to Juneau, which there are so many. I think one of the most obvious ones that we like to talk about is food.
I was going to say, yeah.
There's food. Definitely going to be food involved. Yeah. So that'll be an exciting piece that we're going to highlight. Food, performance, cultural workshops, you know, all of that. And really just emphasizing, again, like the history of the community, our contributions, and how diverse the community is. A lot of people don't really realize or recognize that, you know, in 2014, we were recorded to have 3,000 Filipinos in Juneau. That was in 2014. More people have migrated. Also, a lot of our census data isn't always perfect or aggregated. So there are probably a lot of people with mixed Filipino identities who weren't recorded in that number. So honestly, there's a really big portion of people here who identify as Filipino, and just excited to be able to highlight all of our, like, as many stories as we can.
That's awesome. I know the museum will be on that first Wednesday of October to talk about the exhibit that Friday. But where do we follow for more information now? Are we going to be looking at kto.org for linking to the podcast and all of that sort of thing and all the different details?
Yeah. So another fun part about this project is we have a web link coming up where folks can go check out the podcast, but also just look through all of the different articles and coverage we've done around the Filipino community here. I think it might take a second to have that website up because we have it set, but I don't think it's published.
That's why this is a sneak peek.
Yeah.
We're just at a sneak peek.
Yeah. But that website will be up soon. And once it's out, you know, we'll let everybody know. And that'll be where you can follow along for all of the information out there.
Yeah. So Manga Cuento, right? Is that how you say it?
Yes, Manga Cuento.
Manga Cuento. And that's going to be, you're going to be hearing a lot about that over the next month here at KTOO. You're going to be looking for that podcast and going to First Friday at the Juneau Douglas City Museum and then the celebration at the Philcom Hall. And Tasha, you, I know, have been working tirelessly on this. So Gunath Cheesh for that and for coming in today and just giving us a little sneak peek of what's in store.
Yeah, I'm so excited for October, y'all. Like, it'll be a good time. So.
That's great. Well, thanks so much for coming in. Up next, Juneau Jazz and Classics Fall Music Festival is right around the corner and certainly a sign that fall is here. We'll have a preview of what's coming next right here on Juneau Afternoon from KTOO. Listening to Community Supported Juneau Afternoon on KTOO 104.3 Juneau, 91.7 Juneau Akbay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That's a little bit of the Calder Quartet. They will be coming here as part of the Juneau Jazz and Classics Fall Music Festival for 37 years. Juno Jazz and Classics has provided performances from professional musicians from around the country, educational concerts, instructional workshops, community engagement programs that benefit people of all ages. And for a few years now, they began splitting the festival into two parts, a spring and a fall. And now it's time for the Fall Music Festival. Here with a preview is Sandy Fortier, Executive Director of Juno Jazz and Classics. Sheesh, Sandy, nice to see you.
Nice to see you too. That was a great intro.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, you have been around for a long time, not you necessarily, but right. But definitely the Juno Jazz and Classics. And it was always like a thing everybody would do in May, and that was the thing. And then I think it was about 2 or 3 years ago, mm-hmm. you split it. Mm-hmm. And now there's still a sort of pretty big festival in the spring. And then there's sort of a smaller couple days where we celebrate and you bring up some musicians in the fall, and it sort of gets us ready for, you know, our nice sleepy time in the winter.
Yeah, exactly. we're just trying to keep spirits high a little bit longer here.
Right.
Yeah. Beginning of October is the time where everybody's kind of like, well, what are we going to do for the fall? So here we go. There's great music.
Yeah, it's coming up. So give us a little bit of a rundown of what we're going to hear this time around. When does the festival happen? Who's in it? And I pulled a couple music pieces from some of the musicians so we can hear a little bit of that as well.
Sure. So the Fall Music Festival is October 2nd through the 7th. So it's 6 days of free and ticketed concerts. And we bring up professional musicians from all over the country, and they come and stay for the week and they play concerts. They go into the schools. They'll go play places like the hospital. They used to play at the prison. We're trying to get them back there. Pioneer's Home. So that's what's happening. And tickets are on sale now. So that's why I'm here, just to tell everybody about what you can get into. And we have 4 ticketed concerts. We have a few free concerts, and then some other free events. So like the first day, we'll start off with an open rehearsal, so you can come and see what the insider process is of professional musicians. So all that's on the calendar, and we will be adding more because we are a month out. So now that school's in, we can, you know, get more of that going.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll tell you something about the artists.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a jazz, we have a classical, and then we have this other, we always try to do an other genre that maybe Juno hasn't heard before. And so that's what we have going this fall. Our classical is the Calder Quartet, and they're a string quartet, and string quartets are great. We have a lot of them because they can play a really wide range of music. There's a lot of music written for string quartets. And we're going to put that in Shuka Hit in the Clan House at Sea Alaska Heritage. And the acoustics are so good there. So I'm really excited for those concerts.
That's going to sound amazing in there.
Yeah. It's beautiful in there, and it sounds so good. And it's a really intimate place. So it's perfect for that kind of music.
And they're going to be playing a little Beethoven, a little Schubert, and then a little bit of, I don't know how to say his name, but it's Thomas Adès, A-D-E-S. And that's what we heard a little bit before to come into the show. And they're going to be playing that night, the first night, right? Is that their first night?
Yep, that's their first. They'll come and do the open rehearsal, and then the next night they'll do the concert.
I love the idea of an open rehearsal.
Yeah.
Especially because they probably haven't played in a clan house before.
That's true.
So that's going to be fun for them as well, yeah. Right? Yeah. And if you haven't been to the Shuka Hit at the Sea Alaska, it's an amazing space. Like, it is really built for all kinds of performance. And this is interesting to see that the string quartet will be in there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So that's a great start to the festival. And then the night after, we'll just go the exact opposite. We have Jazz at the Jack. And the artist is Chelsea Green in the Green Project. And she's a jazz violinist. I know you would think, I don't know, violin isn't that classical, blah, blah, blah. But no, she is. First of all, the band backing her up is so good. And then she does like this nice mix of classical jazz, funk. Like, it's everything.
I want to play a little bit of that. This is something that she does. It's called Groove Ready.
Okay.
And this is Chelsea Green and the Green Project. Let's just hear like a minute of that or something. It's really awesome.
Thank you.
got that classical with the, it's like your name. It's like Juno Jazz and Classics. It's like got a little bit of both in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's called Groove Ready. And I also have something of hers because she also sings. So let's hear a little bit of this. It's called Autumn Leaves.
The falling leaves drift by my window. Those autumn leaves of red and gold. I see your lips, those summer kisses, those sunburned hands I used to hold.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to just request that she does that song while she's here.
It's going to be autumn, and autumn leaves should be a song. That's why I was like, oh, yeah, we got to play that, because that just seems to fit perfectly the idea of the festival, right?
Yeah.
So, and the timing of the festival. So, yeah, Chelsea Green and the Green Project coming to Juneau as part of the festival. What else we got?
And then, so we have Zool Bailey. He's our artistic director, and he plays every now and then at our festival, and no one ever gets sick of him because he's just so captivating. He's a Grammy Award winning cellist. If you haven't heard him, he's worth checking out, and he'll be playing a concert with Chelsea Green. So that's our Putting on the Ritz concert. And I'm crossing my fingers that they find a way to collaborate and do a song together.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Zool's great. He's been the music director, artistic director for a few years now, right?
Yeah. 2020,
right in the middle of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Perfect timing. Perfect timing. He's been on the show a few times. He's a wonderful guy, great musician. And you can definitely check out his stuff online. He's got all kinds of different kinds of recordings, and yeah, plays the festival a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be the Putting on the Ritz.
That's our fancy event.
That's where we dress
food,
up.
Dessert, and, yeah. Dress up. Yeah.
Oh, nice. And where's that going to be at?
That's at Paradovich Hall.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we have just one more artist, which is a Mike Block Trio. And he's a cellist also. And he straps a cello to his chest. He developed this whole contraption so that he can walk around while he's playing. And he does a lot of different things too. I feel like people who like going to the folk festival will like his kind of
music.
Yeah,
let's hear a little bit of this. This is from the Mike Block Trio, and it's called One Fine Day.
Singing songs from long ago, trudging through the snow. As I go, I walk alone. Breathing hard, moving slow.
Yeah, it's got a very folk festy vibe to it.
Yeah.
And he also, I love the fact that he's trying. And he straps it to his body and walks around and probably maybe has a microphone too because he's singing at the same time. I don't know. It's going to be fun to see how that works.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be just more, that much more of a show, I think.
Okay. So I know we can do individual tickets. Some of the events are free, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are ticketed. And there's also the opportunity to buy like a little... Is there like a little festival pass or something?
Yeah, we have some packages. So the more concerts you buy, the more of a discount you get. So if you buy all four, I'm trying to remember what it is.
Yeah.
It goes up to a 20% discount.
Okay.
Because I know it's a lot to just shell out a bunch of money for all these concerts and you want to go. So we want to make sure that you can come.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, supporting, I mean, you guys have, and your website is, I've said this before, it's the greatest website in the world because it's just jazzandclassics.org. Like,
I know. I mean, I
guess when you've been around for 37 years and the internet came out, you were somebody in the past, you, past executive director, was like, oh, we're going to lock that in.
Yeah, that's
got
right.
Got that web address pretty early. So remind us again of the dates and all of those things.
So the Juno Jazz and Classics Fall Music Festival is October 2nd through the 7th with free and ticketed events. And you can buy tickets at jazzandclassics.org. And if you want to volunteer and get into the concert, we need about 50, we have about 50 volunteer spots. So you can either email volunteer@jazzandclassics.org or you can go on the website and you'll find all the links to sign up for that. And we'll train you up if you've never volunteered before. So that's also another way to get in with the concerts.
That's great. And I know that the one of the free family concerts is on October 7th, 10:30 at the Valley Library. That's going to be the Mike Block Trio, mm-hmm. Which is sounds like it's really great music for the family and all that kind of stuff. So I'm figuring that the evening events are the mostly the ticketed events, and there's other things around that that are that are happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then all the work that they do in the schools and doing workshops for the kids and all that. Is there any public workshops that aren't for the schools that are available?
Not this time. We'll have some for you in the spring, but not this time.
Okay.
We'll probably, if you're not following us on social media or like on Facebook or Instagram, you should do that because we'll probably do pop-up concerts here and there. Like, oh, everyone head over to Heritage Coffee or something. So we'll, those will be added in. Like, you know, right after work, maybe sometime on the weekends.
Yeah, yeah. And I know we're going to have some of the folks come in when they're here, mm-hmm. and we'll hear a little bit more of their music then. But Sandy Fortier from the Juno Jazz and Classics Executive Director giving us a preview of what's coming in early October. And now is the time to secure your tickets because sometimes these performances, they sell out because they're in smaller spaces and you may, you know, want to make sure that you get your tickets.
That's right.
Right?
Yep, yep.
All right. Thanks, Sandy, for coming in. We're going to go out with a little bit more of the Mike Block Trio.
Thank you.
Anticipate. Oh, one fine day. To the station, but I am still waiting for my maiden. She never ever got off the train, but I will never ever stop waiting. One fine day I'll have it made. One fine day to anticipate. Sappy, I am planning to be oh so happy. One fine day I'll piece it all together. All the hours will feel better.
Do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a wonderful Wednesday. On tomorrow's show, a preview of September's first Friday with Ellen Carley from the museum. Kindred Post celebrates an anniversary along with Chloe Kavanaugh, and the Jack will have the arts roundup. Juno Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello out the road. Find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, provide feedback, give us ideas, subscribe to the podcast, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Thanks, and have a glorious Juno evening.